For some of you, it's your first time. For others, it is not. But for today, I would like to welcome you all to Epic Realms.
Friends and enemies, heroes and villains, welcome to Epic Realms. Today's guest is an amazing friend of the show, being a record third appearance on the podcast, not to mention these appearances on our live stream events. He is the creator of the Forgotten Realms. He's worked as a writer and a creator for many, many companies, as well as written a plethora of amazing novels. Please welcome the illustrious Ed Greenwood to Epic Realms. How are you doing, Ed?
I'm doing fine. Hi, thanks for having me. Hi, everybody.
So, and for those that are listening to the podcast, there was an audio malfunction at the beginning, and we just had to fix it. So it's definitely fun times here on the live stream. So much has happened since your last appearance on the show, and I wanted to kind of just bounce around at some of the stuff that you've done since the last time you were here throughout the day. And one of the things that gets brought up, and I don't know if you'll remember this, and I don't know if you can talk about it, but when you were on, you had mentioned something about having some NDAs about 3 years ago that you couldn't necessarily talk about. And my question is were any of those related to the new movie that came out or to the Baldur's Gate 3 game that came out? Because those were huge, huge things in the D&D world and had direct ties to you as a creator.
Yeah, I can't remember the specific NDAs. I knew a little about both of those projects.
Okay.
And of course, you're not supposed to talk about any of them. So, yeah, it could have been stuff I knew about the D&D movie because I did have an interesting phone call in the middle of the D&D movie, which I won't share the details of.
Yeah.
But very, very late at night because apparently at some point on one of the locations of the D&D movie, they got COVID on the set. So they did the thing where everybody is sort of quarantined in their trailers for like 14 days or whatever.
Oh, wow.
It was then. So they were bored, and some of them were bored and had a phone, which is a bad combination. And I got a phone call very late at night after certain people had been drinking to ask me what D&D was. And it was sort of like, shouldn't you guys know this before you start making it? Never mind. But I mean, there's stuff like that. And I knew some things about Baldur's Gate 3. But no, the NDAs, and you see, I also know some things about future products that are coming out.
Right.
And for a while there, I don't actually know the official policy of the company because we now have had changes in management since I last heard. But it used to be for a little while that Wizards of the Coast under Hasbro had a policy sort of like Apple computers. We don't discuss forthcoming products, but you've already put out ads for it. I just want to ask, no, we don't discuss forthcoming products. You know, so, and when you get that policy, then yeah, it's understood that there's, whether they tell you specifically, this is one of your NDAs covers this, you've been in the game long enough, you can go, oh, okay, this is NDA'd.
Yeah.
So I would have just automatically, anything I knew was venture. You see, there's two sorts of NDAs. There, I'm going to spill the beans about a product, that sort of NDA. And there's the, I know what's coming out, so anything I say now can be, on this topic, can be read like tea leaves.
Yeah.
So instead of saying anything at all, I'll just say NDA.
Yeah.
Because if I say something, somebody, because gamers are not stupid people, they are the most intelligent, creative people in the world.
Right.
Somebody go, wait a minute, he chose his words very carefully and he slowed down to do so right there, which means I betcha, and then you know that what's coming, so you just say NDA
yeah
and avoid the whole thing.
Yeah, well, especially when there are people that are like, they look into things that aren't there. Like, is that a secret door? No, that's a cat. That's a cat in the corner. But I'm going to spend three gaming sessions figuring out if the cat is a key to the secret door in the back corner of the who's a what's it.
Oh, yeah. I'm. Although part of me loves Spelljammer, I was the first freelancer to work on the original Spelljammer. A little part of me, and I understand the thing about you have to use a trademark every 5 years or you're not defending it.
Yeah.
You know. So I knew Spelljammer was coming, but there's a tiny bit of me that was a little bit disappointed because for years on Twitter and the other places on the net, somebody would say something offhand and somebody else would say, Spelljammer confirmed as a joke. And we couldn't do that anymore. It was like, ah, you took away our toy.
Oh, that's great. When the movie finally did come out, I'm assuming you went and watched it. What were your thoughts overall on the movie then and then now? Because sometimes after you get time to process a movie, thoughts and feelings change. And have they for you?
I loved the movie because I was deathly afraid we were going to get a movie where somebody who doesn't know anything about D&D, because I work in a public library, you know, I have... a lot of contact with lots of members of the public every day.
Right.
And I was afraid somebody was going to come up to me and said, so I went and saw that movie. That's D&D, huh? And instead of being able to say with pride and satisfaction, yeah, that's D&D. So now you've seen it. I was just deathly afraid I'd have a movie going, well, that's not really D&D. You know how they change things, you know, and I didn't have to. I was pleased with the movie. I thought they struck the right tone. Because you basically have 2 hours, because I do a little Hollywood work too. So, you know,
right.
I'm into the thing. You can't make the movie longer unless you're already Peter Jackson or George Lucas or somebody. Right. you have to fit the sit-down time in the theater. If they're going to keep people going to theaters at all after the COVID break.
Right.
So I realized the straitjacket they're operating within. I went to see the movie. I think it's now 8 times I've been, because I'm the only guy who works at my day job, the public library in Port Hope. My library ladies said, "Oh, Ed, your movie's fine. Let's go see your movie." So I took them to see the movie.
Okay.
And two ladies had worked at the library, left the library, started or took over an existing indie bookstore. So I took them.
Right.
Because I happen to work at a library in Port Hope, Ontario. They film a lot of stuff in Port Hope.
Okay.
Because it has a period main street.
Mm-hmm.
So that we have a TV show in Canada called Murdoch Mysteries. It's been running for years. They always film that. All of the Stephen King It movies and now Greetings from Fairview or Welcome to Fairview, the streaming TV series that will be the prequel, they've all been filmed there.
Oh,
so
okay.
We're used to this. So, and one of the people who works with them at the bookstore was an extra in the movie.
Oh,
so one of the It movies. He carried a red balloon around from scene to scene.
Okay.
Okay. So he was like, okay, I want to see this movie. So off I went, took them to the movie. The local brewery in Port Hope had a screening of the movie. So they invited me to come and do a Q&A at the end of the movie. So I've seen the movie over and over and over again, and it stands up.
Yeah.
To reputed viewing. I really enjoy it, even though I know what's coming now in every scene.
Right.
And there are plenty of Easter eggs. Like, for instance, the large oval portrait that they think they're going to use to hit the theater staff and go through and get into the treasure vault that they managed to get into the coach. That's a portrait of Volo.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that stuff like that. You know, little. So I sat through the movie and I enjoy it. Over and over again, I enjoy it. So they did it right. You know, you could always quibble about, this way and that thing and all that. But, you know, I can recognize Castle Never when they do the Neverwinter scenes. Everything feels right.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the humor when they're questioning the tribes. You know, it just,
right.
All right, I like it, you know.
I sat there and I watched the movie. And I watched the movie from two points of view. One, a fan. And two, from a person who does the show. And the first thing I thought of is, God, they did Ed proud, I think. I felt. That's how I felt. And I, to me, I walked out of that and I was like, that's it. And I don't know whether you don't even have to respond, but I walked out of that going, that was Ed's movie. That's what that was. I felt like that was for you, regardless of whether they even consulted you or talked to you or anything. I was like, that was great. So, congratulations on your movie.
Thank you. Yeah, I felt the same way. I really enjoyed it. There were people who said, "Oh, they didn't credit you. What a rip." Blah blah blah. And I don't care. That what matters to me was, okay, you know that they are going to have story reasons for making minor changes to
Right.
game rules stuff.
Right.
You just know that because movie making is different than any, and I thought, yeah, they didn't change anything really big and really important that we really have to explain away. They got it. And it felt like a fun time for all the adventures. And it felt very much like a real D&D adventure. The dungeon master prepares this, and the players go, "Our characters are going over here.
Yeah.
I don't care what you plan." Because and all these endless plans that Edrin is coming up with. Plan B, plan C. There's no way. We're just gonna wing it. Nothing's gonna go the way you want it.
Right. What was your thoughts on the use of Elminster in the storyline? Being the creator of Elminster, and nobody knows more about that than you. What was your thoughts on how they utilized his character in the movie?
Well, that's not Elminster. That's Simon's conception of what his ancestor would be in the magic item he's trying to attune to. For one thing, the guy playing Elminster has the wrong skin color. He doesn't look like Elminster, but that's what Simon thinks his ancestor would look like. So yeah, and yeah, it had that guy was a bit more. Came across as a bit more like, say, Kellan Blackstaff would come, a bit more arrogant than Elminster. Elminster's a little more whimsical than that. But again, it's Simon's conception. It's not the character. And for that matter, when I look at Baldur's Gate 3 and they have Elminster there, I don't disagree with that, the way the character comes across. Sure, being as Elminster, always tries to steal all my food when he comes to Earth. That's right in line that he's after your cheese,
Well,
I don't mind.
and looking at the movie, like just the fact that they used like this is his the ancestor sort of thing and the ancestor line, in your mind is he still in the world somewhere? Is that to be determined? Maybe they'll make a future movie and he's out there somewhere. Maybe he's not.
Oh yeah. I do think he is. There are, again, and there are NDAs, but let me just say, this was not the first attempt by a studio to make a D&D movie.
No.
And
It's just the first one that was good.
the
Sorry.
well
Is
the
that
no, I don't mean that. I mean in the
allowed?
modern era.
You
I
didn't
mean in
say
the
it. I
modern,
said it. People can come at me.
yeah, no, in the modern era with
Okay.
because those previous ones were in effect under the aegis of the company, far more closely. But I mean,
Yeah.
I've sat through pitch meetings from various Hollywood studios.
Okay.
I get all the big Hollywood studios of the time have pitched stories to us, and I'm gonna weaken the story by invoking the yeah, I really should do the NDA thing here, but let's just say that,
You can do the NDA thing. You know I'm cool with that. So just so you know, I have no problem with that.
So, the pitch meetings, I was on a pitch meeting with a particular other famous author, who, threw the guy who was giving the pitch right off his stroke by starting to recite his pitch a line ahead of him. So of course the guy ground to a halt and said, "Oh my God, who leaked it?" And the author said, "Nobody leaked it. I've seen the Dirty Dozen. I know what comes next in your plot."
Right.
And the guy was like very, because that's what they were doing. They were doing the Dirty Dozen set in the realms. And if you're gonna do the Dirty Dozen set in the realms and have your own new characters as the main characters of the movie, and that's what you always want to do, because you can control the fates and what happens in the game to your own characters because you've added them.
Yeah.
And if you want to have bendable puppets and lunch boxes and so on, that's all you because it's your character.
Yeah.
So you know they're going to do that. And the moment they do that, you have to get it. It's the old thing that Marvel Comics would have, because when they were introducing a new book or a new character, they'd always have that character fight Spider-Man because Spider-Man was their top seller.
Right.
The problem is, if that character comes from another world or the galaxy out there, you have to figure out what the Fantastic Four was doing, what the Avengers were doing, what was keeping all of them busy. So poor lowly Spider-Man had to be the guy ended up, you know. Yeah. So they had that problem. And the problem is, if you're going to tell the story, you either have to use Driss Doerden and Elminster of Shadowdale, or you have to, in the movie, get them off stage, keep them busy, so your heroes have a chance to shine.
Yeah.
So I have seen innumerable scripts that tried to do that in various ways. And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm just delighted we got a movie that I can be proud of as a gamer rather than apologetic for. That's all. I realize that to some people might think a low bar, but again, it's having not done Hollywood work, I know that making a movie is this floating crapshoot of trying to get your leading man, your leading lady, and your director, all three of them in the same box at the same time without one of them dying on you or, you know, getting neck flesh eating disease or something. So they can't, you know, do the movie.
Right.
And it's just a major achievement to get them all together. And then to have them work intensively on something that does depend on stuff the audience might not be familiar with. You see, it's different when you're telling a James Bond movie.
Right.
Even if Q is inventing new gadgets, when Bond throws something and it blows up, or Bond picks up a phone and uses a phone, you don't have to stop and explain to the audience what a phone is.
Right.
But the moment you're doing something fantasy, you have to make sure that without slowing down the movie and giving horrible explanations, you know, info dumps,
yeah,
everybody gets the stakes of what's going on in every scene, and you're usually fast action. You know, it's breakneck speed. You saw in this movie, I'm going to mildly spoil it for some people. There is a scene in which an overweight dragon is plummeting very fast. that's straight out of that's Eric Boyd created Thembershod. The movie moved Thembershod from where he is in the Underdark because he's too fat to get out of where he is. They inexplicably moved him for plot reasons to somewhere else in the Underdark that he'd managed somehow to get from one to the other. But anyway, and that was another criticism that somebody had,
right,
that I think is legitimate. They didn't give Thembershod any speaking parts, meaning somebody who knew nothing about D&D could leave that movie thinking that dragons were dumb brutes rather than really intelligent and long-lived.
Right.
Whereas if they'd just given him some dialogue, oh, wait a minute, he can think too. Now he's twice as dangerous.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But by and large, you know, I was just so pleased that we got a movie that I can be proud of. I don't mind about any of the rest of it. I want another one.
I do, too. I think that it was great. I think everybody who likes D&D, I have not heard a D&D fan, really, a real D&D fan go, that was a horrible movie. I can't believe they did that. Like, everybody's like, that was a great movie. It felt like an RPG. It felt like a group of people together at a table having fun with a cohesive team. You know, it was great. And I love the books. They did a couple books too that prequeled that were really good as well. So,
yeah, I've enjoyed those. And of course, as someone who laments the loss of the novel line, the fact that we got some novels out of it, great. Yeah. You know,
yeah.
So yeah, sure. all good, all good. I'm a happy camper. Bring them on. Let's do more movies.
Right.
Now, of course, you can say that, but from Hollywood point of view, they may consider that movie a flop, in that it didn't make what they hoped it would make. Now, again, anybody who works on movies could say, well, that was your fault for when you brought it out. What movies you brought it out against.
Right, right.
The Mario, Super Mario Brothers, you know, and having their movie and so on. But that, never no mind, it could still be viewed as a flop. Yeah. And there's also another...
I think the aftermarket sales might help, though, too. So.
True, yeah. But there's another real politic reason or thing that is, and we're seeing it with Larian now. If you're the copyright holder and you want to maintain control and you want to be seen as maintaining control, you switch studios for the next movie. So it isn't a brilliant studio making movie. It's a canon and importance and control rest with you. Executives who hire the new movie. Anyway, you see what I mean?
Yeah,
there's that there too. But yeah, all in all, I view the movie as a solid smashing success story.
Agreed. You mentioned Baldur's Gate 3, and I want to touch on that a little bit as well, because that was also a huge impact. We brought that up as one of the things. You mentioned Elminster there, and I looked at it and I went, did they kind of base him off of Ed? Because he did look quite a bit like you facial structurally, not just the fact, you know, beard, white hair, whatever, but like facial structure, eyes, cheekbones, all of that stuff. To me, it really kind of looked like you. Did you see that? Has anybody else mentioned that to you?
Yeah. One person said, was that you? And
I honestly thought they put you in a machine and scanned your face.
Okay. So. no, they didn't.
Okay.
Because again, what I was saying earlier, you know, when they want to be center of canon, they don't want me to be the center of canon. And you know, here I am the creator and I'm inconveniently still alive. So, if they could somehow sideline me, that would be better because that means it comes from them.
Right.
You know, and in fact, if you look at the closing credits, it says Hasbro's Dungeons and Dragons. And of course, all the gamers are going, what? Oh yeah, I suppose it is.
They did have a thanks to section. Your name was in there. I recall seeing. I stayed for the credits, just looking for your name.
Yeah, and of course, to me, the sad thing. I love that long outro with all that was fun, in and of itself. But of course, the sad thing was they were thanking Kim Mohan for being their advisor, and of course, Kim had died just months before the movie, and it was like okay, well, at least he got an acknowledgement, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
I'd rather have him still alive than an acknowledgement. But and you know, I'm sure a lot of us would feel that, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway. But yeah, I'm yeah. Well, yeah. But no, I enjoyed that thing and let's do another one.
Yeah. Your thoughts on Volo in being used as kind of a early on big storyteller in the Baldur's Gate 3 game?
My only, there are moments in Baldur's Gate 3 where it feels like, the designers are wedging their story into the realms rather than fitting the realms.
Right.
And of course that's a danger for everybody, any novelist, whatever. Does your story feel like the realms, or did you have to sort of force it in? It's like you order a replacement part for something that breaks in your home.
Okay.
And it arrives and it doesn't quite fit. So you end up, you know, filing away and changing the opening to make it fit because it's the only replacement available, that sort of thing. And one of the things that didn't fit with Volo is Volo is a weave anchor for Mistra.
Yes.
And that's why he's still alive after all the stupid shit he's done in his life, because he doesn't realize he has a guardian angel or several guardian angels, because it's Azuth and Mistra and they're chosen. And so no matter how many stupid things he does, he somehow comes up roses or at least stays alive every time. How does that happen? Well, it's because he's a weave anchor. So what can happen to him in the game very easily should not be able to happen to him if they were fitting with the lore. But of course, that's where you either somebody missed that because they were in too much of a hurry, or they change things because they had to for their game purposes, yeah. One or the other. So there were little things like that. But again, by and large, I am so delighted. And of course, everybody, all these gamers are going, oh my God, you can have sex with the characters instead of killing them. You know, to me, it's not whether you can have sex. It's the fact that we finally have a game where you can interact with characters without the baseline thing being and kill them. You know, there's something else right. You can do with the characters. You can live with them. You can work with them. They can be your friends. They can be in your party. They can be part of your camp. You don't have to kill everybody you meet. They're giving you, to me, that's delightful. It's like saying, look, you see, you can live in this world day after day. Now, there's a part of me that sort of went, of course you did. That's lazy storytelling, because that's the Hollywood me talking. Oh, we always go to the gods. Yeah, lazy storytelling, because that's how you make your story matter. The whole world hangs in the balance because you can change the gods, or you can evolve the gods, or you can kill a god, or you can become a god, or whatever. And again, it was like, yeah, you went for the low-hanging fruit. But never mind. What you did in going for the low, because it's done now, so never mind. But what you accomplished in going for the low-hanging fruit is you gave us a game that is more popular than many games have been, and it's more popular with people who aren't gamers and don't know the first thing about D&D, and they can still love this game. So again, it's another win. So, which is where I say to myself, okay, Ed, so shut up and let people enjoy what they love, because they're doing good things for the whole game because they did such a good job with this game. So yeah, I have in the end, no complaints, because all those little cavils and all the little things like, what, you left the upper city out? Or, you can go to Old Minster's library in the brothel. I mean, the fest hall. Okay, so let me in. I'm Old Minster. Come on, let me in. Oh, no, we didn't actually put it in the... Well, why not? Don't tease me, man. That's like one of those car ads on TV where they play sexy classical music and somebody with leather driving gloves races the car, or, you know, around a twisty road on the edge of a cliff with a seashore below. And you think, and then they tell you it can go from 0 to 60 in, you know, 1.2 seconds. And you go, yeah, will it start in the cold when I need to? Because I'm never going to have a chance to go 0 and 60 unless I want to get arrested.
Yeah.
You know,
if the road is icy, will it slide off, or will it get on the ice?
Yeah. But still.
Does the radio work? Does the radio
work? Does the radio work? Yeah. yes. There's a very funny story tied to that, which is not suitable for the podcast because it involves obscenities. Does the radio still work?
Right.
You know, because there is a large junkyard near one of our major highways in Ontario that you drive past. And so if you ever need a piece from some car that is no longer made, you might remember passing this thing and say, oh, I'll go there. And so, of course, you end up sitting in a car that's missing its doors, and because it's missing its doors and sitting in a field, the squirrels have been camping in it, or raccoons or something. And you're looking at the thing and you're checking around, and somebody always comes up and makes the joke, oh, does the effing radio still work? And if it does, you buy the car.
There you go. Who cares about the doors and the squirrels and the raccoons?
Does the radio still work? Because if the radio still works, what it really means is the electric still work, because you can start the radio.
Yeah.
No, so anyway, I will stop digressing now, because otherwise.
You mentioned Eric Boyd, and I know that Eric and George, can't remember his last name off the top of my
George
head.
George Crashos.
Yeah.
George Crashos.
I know they do a lot with, like, you know, kind of explaining things that maybe don't make sense, or that shouldn't make sense or whatever, and kind of getting things to work in canon. Do you want to talk a little bit about the two of them and kind of the work they do in that regard?
Yeah, I'd love to, because they've been doing it for years behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And they just email me and say, are you okay with this, Ed? You know, because they want my blessing for some major thing they've they've right. changed or done. And I always give it because it's always delightful. You know, what they've done is like, all right, thank you. And they've made entire careers out of for free as fans. I mean, yes, you can now buy some of their stuff on DM's Guild. But that's a new outlet. It didn't exist. They were doing it for years right. without DM's Guild existing. And they would explain away something that had been printed that seemed to contradict something else in lore. And they would explain away the contradiction, which is like true fan service.
Yeah.
You know, and I just love that. And
make it make sense.
Yeah, make it make sense. And at times, the copyright holder was actually using another way of dealing with, just ignore it, hand wave it, move on. But the problem is, with that approach, is you get so many better stories when you do what Eric and George are doing.
Right.
And other people like Brian Cortio specializes in Cormyr. But if you become like a subject matter expert on a little corner of the realms, and you take care of all of these inconsistencies and explain them away, you make the tapestry richer for all of us.
Yeah.
And you come up with new stories. You're actually spinning new story possibilities in the realms because you explained this aboleth and explained that beholder. And now things make sense, and you've just spun up a new story for somebody. And, you know, it's I really think that the publisher should pay a little more attention to what they're doing, not to stop them, but to say, oh, if we did this, we'd get so many more. I mean, they're not free adventures because you still have to spend staff time on
right.
developing them. But like free, because you didn't have to make up a whole new plot line or everything. It's already there sitting in front of us.
Right.
And now, just because you're explaining away some apparent inconsistency, you've got a whole new adventure out of it. Holy crap, how did that happen? Let's
right.
do that again.
Right.
You know?
What are your thoughts on the DM's Guild? I know you've got a handful of books on the DM's Guild as well.
Well, okay. I have actually not put anything up on the DM's Guild.
No?
I don't even know how to do it.
Okay.
However, I have worked with a lot of really good people like Alex Kammer, who runs GameHoleCon.
Okay.
Good friend of mine. He wanted to publish stuff because Baldwin Games was given the Moonshae Isles to play with, and he was given the Border Kingdoms.
Okay.
And so he approached me and said, Ed, you never got to finish the Border Kingdoms. You tried three times, you know, Polyhedron Magazine, the book that was called originally Ruling the Realms when we were working on it and ended up being called Power of Faerûn. I started doing a bit of the Border Kingdoms that I'd had to stop abruptly when the Polyhedron Newzine went under, you know, and it's sort of like we stopped in the middle of the alphabet. So I tried, you know, so he helmed the book. He paid for all the art. He took care of arranging to have somebody lay it out for us,
okay.
you know, who knew what they were doing. So all I was doing was what I did for TSR all those years, generate gobs of raw content, and then somebody else would see if it fit,
okay.
put it all together and say, we need more on this and less on this. So I wasn't actually putting anything up on the guild, and I wouldn't know, I don't even know how to get, you know, money out of the guild for the stuff. I literally don't know because I've never tried.
Okay.
So it's other people putting stuff up. But yes, using the guild in that way is delightful to me because I can cover all sorts of stuff. And there are lots of other people, nothing directly to do with me, who want to bring to life this or that adventure. And they quite often send it to me again for my blessing or to ask me to write a foreword for it.
Right,
right now I'm writing forewords for a whole bunch of dragons that you've seen before, the Worms of the North, because there are people working on a big project with them, you know, so and I'm writing a lot of forewords
yeah.
as a result. And that sort of thing is lovely because one of the problems with the approach that the copyright holder is taking right now, because they want to be able to easily license the property out to third parties, is they've been keeping all the realm stuff in fifth edition pretty much in the Sword Coast. And Pete, gamers who happen to have their campaign set somewhere else, or who just look at somewhere else geographically in the realms and say, oh, that's way more interesting to me, I want to do that. And then there's absolutely nothing that comes out for it. And there's no baseline fifth edition realms product at all. It doesn't exist, never got published. Then this helps to fill the gap. Yeah. And I get their publishing plans, but then there's another part of me that says, no, your strength is the gamers who love your stuff and buy it.
Right.
Service the gamers, give them what they want for the product. If you understand what you're publishing, D&D, for goodness sake, give them what they want for their campaigns, and they will love you for it, and they will come back and buy your next thing. But if you don't service them, if you ignore them, then that'll show too.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they, there are times when I think, you know, what are they smoking up there?
And is it any good? And can you share some with us?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure there'll be a platinum edition out real soon now.
Did you do anything with the when the cookbooks came out, the Heroes Feast cookbooks and all that, with Michael Whitwer and Kyle Newman? Did you do anything with them? Did you talk with any of them about any of those books or any of those things?
No, they didn't consult with me or talk to me at all. And it's a real pity, because I had been publishing Realms recipes for years.
I know, that's why I asked.
Yeah. And we have Artie Pavlov, also known as Juniper Chergol, which is one of the characters, has been faithfully going through all the stuff I mentioned in various products and making them.
Yeah, and posting them on the Forgotten Realms Wiki.
Yeah, yeah. And
he's been on our stream a few times in the last couple of months hanging out and chatting. So
Yeah. So you know. And the thing is, he's doing that in a small apartment kitchen. And so if he can do it, you can do it.
Right.
It doesn't, you know, now he's certainly much better at cooking than I am, for instance. But the point is, he's not a world-class chef in a professional kitchen with, you know, tons of sous chefs and lots of apparatus. He's basically cooking at home. He just knows what he's doing. And by the time he's showing you the steps and taking photographs and told you, this was a little salty, but I did this, you know, that sort of thing, you think you can make it at home. And a little secret, almost every single one of those recipes I published, if you substitute chicken or occasionally pork chop or something like that, you can make it at home, because I'm not in the business of killing gamers.
Right.
They're my people. So I actually, when I'm making up recipes, I try and make up a recipe for real in my kitchen. And I'm not much of a cook, but I rationalize that away by saying, never mind, it's sort of like rustic, rural, medieval cooking.
Right.
So it's going to be pretty simple, because it's got to be something that you can do while you're struggling to do everything else in your day. It can't be something where it says, blanch this, put it in the fridge, wait 3 days, then bring it out. No, there's none of that.
So if they do an old school, maybe they'll just do an old school. Maybe they'll just do the, instead of calling it Heroes Feast or whatever, maybe the third book will just be like the Volos Cookbook or something like that. And then they'll just follow you in.
I don't know if the, because there's only one Volo. After you've cooked him, I don't know what what does everybody else eat?
Well, you just cast a regeneration spell and you just little pieces here and there and he'll be fine. He'll be fine.
Sorry. Yeah. Sorry. That's the cheap joke. But you see, up here, they sell us now in our supermarkets cowboy steaks, and today
cowboys.
Yeah, exactly. I don't. That's why we don't see many cowboys anymore, because they're all in the steaks, you know. and today, in our kitchen, cowboy sausages made their appearance.
No,
from the supermarket, labeled as cowboy sausages. So yeah. That's obviously where the cowboys are.
I don't really know if I want to think about that one too deeply.
Well, I know where some of those cowboys have been. I've seen those movies.
let's chat a little bit about something else that's been a big change since you've been on here, and that's the YouTube and the Patreon. sites that you've got up and running. You came out with the, you know, the YouTube channel started coming out and, you know, doing these stories and, you know, on both YouTube and on Patreon, these backstories and, you know, fleshing out the realms even more, things that might not have been in books and things like that. When you sit down to make one of these videos or record one of these podcasts or the audio forum or do any of those, do you go into your stuff and be like, okay, we're going to talk about this and grab all your stuff and reread stuff you've done in the past? Or is it just off the top of your head?
Okay. Those things exist because of two fans of the realms, Joaquin Lippincott, who approached me and bankrolled the whole thing, and Ivan Potosnik, who does all the editing work.
Yeah, and he's the one I know him. I don't know Joaquin.
Okay, yeah. And yeah, Joaquin is a company executive, very successful and very busy in order to, you know, be successful. But I couldn't do any of that without them. And because I am technically a Luddite, because I did lots of stage and lighting in high school, but I'm 64 and a half years old. It was all analog, very different equipment than we use today. And you can't even get most of the equipment I trained on anymore, you know. So, you know, when everything goes belly up and we, you know, the apocalypse comes, we won't be able to record anymore because all that old stuff would still have worked and the new stuff won't. Yeah. But never mind. Like, that's me being the old curmudgeon. But what happens is, because of this lovely Patreon and the Discord server, Greenwood's Grotto, we do Q&As monthly.
Mm-hmm.
We keep sliding behind, but, you know, we're trying to do them monthly, and we answer questions for the supporters, so we know what they want more of. And Ivan and I talk a lot, and I write scripts for all these things. I sometimes read them verbatim, sometimes they just serve as a springboard, and when I'm, you know, behind the mic, the story tells itself. But it works better when you script them, even if you don't follow the script, because it just organizes your thoughts.
Yeah.
But do I go back and find everything? I try to go back and check some things, because some things are ticklish, as in the topic requires research because somebody else did a Realms novel or somebody else delved into that in a product. And because I didn't do it myself, it hasn't. All the details haven't stuck in my head because it wasn't something I wrote.
Right.
So I don't want to do a disservice to what somebody else added to the grand tapestry of the realms. Just, I'm not one of those guys who says, well, I didn't write it, so I don't care.
Yeah.
I'll just make up whatever. No, what they have published is just as good as what I have published. So I have to respect it. So there are certain topics that it takes me a while because I have to find my old notes, or I have to find my copy of that long out of print product, because as you can tell by looking behind me, this is a corner of my writing office, and there's a
just one corner.
Yeah, one tiny corner. That's the D&D books behind me, or at least it's the fifth edition books, because nothing else will fit here. That's two rooms away, and then you see there's go all over the house to find certain things that I literally haven't looked for 40 or 50 years. So, and that's why sometimes when somebody asks about a topic, I'll go, yeah, I'll get to that. Whereas other things, I know that we haven't covered it in lore, so I can sit down and write something new.
Yeah.
And that's a lot faster, because I don't have to check things against other things other than a quick check of the Forgotten Realms wiki online to make sure there isn't a computer game I'd never heard of. You know, because in the early days of the Realms, they sent me everything. That was part of the gentleman's agreement, which obviously there are no gentlemen anymore because they don't send me anything. I don't get free copies of any, even the books I work on.
Right.
So what that means is I might miss something.
Yeah.
Because they weren't sending them to me to be nice guys. Well, maybe they were, but I mean, they were sending them to me so I wouldn't do or say the wrong thing in public because I didn't know about something.
Yeah.
You know, it's better if it looks like the left hand and the right hand have a nodding acquaintance with each other.
Right.
It looks better for the company. And I used to, you know, get to see everything, and now I have to make sure I haven't missed something. That's all. So that affects how quickly I can write about something. And the answer to your question is sometimes I'm making it up out of whole cloth. And sometimes I have to carefully research. And sometimes we have a conundrum. We have one of those things that Eric and George work with. There are conflicting lore, like, say, the Blood Forges down in the Outer East.
Right.
From that computer game. Where do they end up? Or you publish an adventure, and it's assumed in later realms writing that the hero succeeded or failed or whatever because of what's in the later product.
Yeah.
So you then have to, okay, but we never went back and talked about that. It's just assumed. So now I have to work out what the implications are and lay them out for the reader. This meant that these people migrated out of here, or this meant that this, or this meant that that. And so I have to make, I'm making a design decision for the entire world now. So I have to think about it long enough instead of just shooting from the lip and going ahead and publishing something, right. Which is fun. And I can do it off the top of my head because I've been doing it for, lo, these many years. Whoa, man and boy. But but it's not the right thing to do for the world that we all love and hopefully share and hopefully want to use in our campaigns. So it'd be really nice if it hung together and made sense.
Yeah, for sure. What is it like for you now that you've been doing it for a little while? Like when you first started, it was like, okay, here's this new thing. We'll try it out. And now, you know, there's a successful YouTube channel. Patreon is going well. Your Discord is always, there's so many people in that Discord. How is it for you looking at it and going, wow, this is awesome, or this is a thing? Now that you've been doing it for a while, what are your thoughts?
I love it because it means this has enough steam now that it will outlive me. I don't have to worry about the whole thing collapsing when I die. There are people who love the realms and work on it every day like I do, and it's their world now, not just mine. They will keep it going. So I don't have to worry about, you know, and that isn't like, oh, I need to leave my legacy, because guess what? I've seen so many people do so much damage to the world because they wanted to leave their legacy.
Well, you could have ended saying you left your legacy 10, 20 years ago, Ed. So, and nobody in the live stream, nobody in the chat, nobody who listens to this podcast, nobody in those Discords will say otherwise. So your legacy is solid.
Well, yeah. Okay. Thank you. But, but I mean, for me, it was like, I want the realms, like if I die tomorrow and if the copyright holder said, oh good, he's dead, we can make our own new world now. And then they stop publishing something, as pretty much happened with Greyhawk for years.
Right.
I want the world to be in such a robust state that it doesn't matter. You can go on using the realms and it will feel like the realms is still alive, still operating, and still loved by tons of people.
Yeah.
Without me. And I think we've achieved that, so I'm happy now.
Yeah.
Because it means, okay, you did something, it had a life of its own, enough people love it that they care about it, that they're going to keep it going.
Yeah.
You did good. And that's, to me, that's what I want. Because, again, it's not about me. It's about, did you leave the world a better place than you found it? Which is, you know, sort of, you know, the old thing that my dad and granddad would tell me. Well, you just leave the world a better place than you found it. And it feels like maybe I have. So that, to me, is like, oh, that's the joy.
Yeah.
Because that's all I'm trying to do. It's certainly not about making money, because guess what? I'm writing in gaming. I could have been a lawyer or a doctor, which is what, you know, my grandparents wanted, because that was the ticket to success. And I would probably have made quite a go of it. And I would probably have hated every minute of it. But I got to do the 60s thing, which is do what you want to do.
Right.
because if you do what you want to do, you win.
Yeah.
Well, the taxman may not agree that you've won, but you know, you feel like you're winning when you're going through life, and I've managed that, so it's really, you know, it's great.
Yeah, for sure. Let's shift gears a little bit. Another thing that came out when you were on, the second time you were on, it was you and Andrew Velkoskis, and you came on to promote the Kickstarter for Ath Cliath.
Mm-hmm.
Fate of the Norns, that's out. People love all the stuff you're posting on, you know, you're still posting, you've got, there's an entire city. Tell us a bit how, after that came out, what the response was.
It was great. I'm still working on it. We're not done yet. The original Kickstarter, is the stuff should all be out by now. And that's Andrew's headache more than it is mine.
Right.
But what I did was write Ath Cliath for him, and I'm still working on it, lo these many years later, and I still will be working on it for years to come. We did an overview book of Ath Cliath,
yep,
and then we're now doing three deep dives, at least three. There might be a fourth, the tenth city, mm-hmm. And who knows? By then, by the time I get around to doing the fourth, I was working on a city block of it just before we started this, because it never ends.
Right.
Who knows? By the time we get there, in our game, they may finally have expanded across the Liffey to the North Bank, which is very swampy, and I may have a new city district to
completely flesh out.
Yeah, but what we're doing, and for all of you out there who go, yeah, so what? I don't care about Vikings. Not my. Doesn't float my boat. Okay, what I am doing is, I think, the first fully detailed city in fantasy. Every building in every city block is detailed. And every building has at least one non-player character. And because in the game, you can have social combat, that's blackmail to you and me, that where you don't actually have to kill somebody or threaten them with violence, you just threaten them with exposure to get them to do what you want to do. Because of that, every single character has to have a dirty secret in their past, and I have to give it in the rule book. So the Norn, the Dungeon Master, the Game Master, can know what it is, so you can see if you can somehow find it out and how that would work and happen. So what I'm doing is giving you a complete detailed city that you can steal, not to put too fine a point on it, and put in your own campaign using a like D&D or
Pathfinder
or whatever.
It doesn't have to be Fate of the Norns. It's set up in such a way where each whatever.
And if you don't want Viking Rule Dublin on stage, never mind. You just take one city block at random that fits, because I've put in it the sort of stuff you need in your game. You just pull a city block, put a few buildings around it, and that's your new village, way stop, caravan stop, and I've done all the donkey work for you, so you can spend your time enjoying the adventure with your friends around the gaming table instead of, oh god, I have to complete a complete city before we play that.
Right.
I'll stall them for another. No, you don't have to. It's all done. So, drop by here's where I start shilling. Drop by the Pendlehaven booth at a con near you. Take a look at the books. Now, they aren't cheap. That's the other thing about gaming. But if you like it, think of it this way. You pay money up front, and it's taking care of all your problems for doing urban stuff for the rest of your gaming life, if you want it to, because I have designed it to last for 25, 30 years of gaming stuff before you'll get anywhere near exhausting it. So, yeah, I'm having a great fun time doing it, but it takes forever.
Yeah,
which is why nobody's done it before. It's not that gamers didn't want to. It's like nobody was insane enough to invest this amount of time.
But the fact that you're still having fun with it, you know, now a couple, you know, 3 years later, you're still having fun with it and enjoying it. And to me, that's a testament, right? To any writer.
Yeah.
but to do something solid, not pretty much nonstop for 3 years straight and still being like, this is great. I'm having a great time.
Yeah. Well, that's why I do all this gaming stuff. I love doing it and I still love doing it after all these years, which I suppose means I'm crazy. And guess what? I don't care. If that's craziness, I'll take it.
So do you have any other projects coming up? Any other things you're working on that you can talk about that are coming up? I know that there was some mishaps with a game you were working on that didn't necessarily pan out that you were working on. Do you have other books, novels, stories, RPG stuff, anything like that coming up?
Sure. Let me run down some of them. I'll try and hit the highlights.
Hit the highlights.
There is a British fantasy artist called Emily Hare, who's been doing whimsical, beautiful, somewhat creepy monsters for years, just painting them for herself. And she calls the place they live Strange Hollow.
Okay.
Now there is a gaming company that is with a bunch of us in the industry, Elisa Teague, you know, people like that, under the helm of Sean Merwin, is putting together a fifth edition setting called Surviving Strange Hollow.
Okay.
Where we all bring this to life. And some of us are writing the equivalent of folk tales. Some of us are doing adventures journals. Some of us are doing statted monsters, you know, the whole thing. But it's like we're exploring, we're taking these paintings and turning them into fifth edition creatures.
Oh, okay.
So that's coming out and that's going to be fun. Let's see what else. I did a little essay for Goodman Games for a book that's coming out. Yes, the one I was telling you earlier before we went to air, the Start Here role-playing game. Tim Beach, TSR veteran, now Beach House Games, is publishing a very simple introductory role-playing game to get over the hump of, you've got grandma, you've got an uncle, because it's Christmas and you're all gathered together. And you've got the really young kids in the family are clamoring to play D&D, play D&D, play D&D. Right. And you look at the gray hairs in the room and you go, oh, this isn't cribbage or euchre. I'm going to have a hard time here. This is a really simple role-playing game, which has the flavor of old school role-playing.
Okay.
But it pretty much, it takes the game mechanics down to one sentence, which is called the rule.
Okay.
So if you can figure this out, this one basic mechanic, you can role play the game. And then it has little subsettings in it, like wizards and wranglers, serpents and strongholds. So you have like a science fiction setting. You have a straight fantasy setting. You have a Weird West setting. So when Janelle Jacques died, I stepped in to write her bit.
Okay.
I'm still adding little bits and pieces to the game. So Start Here RPG. That's another thing I'm working on.
Okay.
Then there's I just finished doing a computer game with Spearhead Studios called Unforetold Witchstone.
And
that's done now. I'm working on Tommy Gofton's Imaria. That's his world. And if you watch these Legacy of Worlds live streams we're doing this year, you know, with Luke Gygax playing Melf and Keith Baker playing Merrick Stakaneth, Elisa Teague playing Elise of Ravenloft, and Tommy playing Loholt Lindhander from Imaria, his world. He's bringing out new Imaria stuff, and I'm one of the many writers working on that. I owe some Realms fans a Realms short story. I've been doing those forwards for the Worms of the North.
Yeah.
There's tons more stuff that I'll probably forget about because I'm literally, I think the last, I just had to do my taxes. Surprise!
Surprise!
And I think this last year I worked on 19 projects.
Okay.
Plus incidental short stories and poems and stuff I just wrote for me.
Yeah.
I think I worked for 19 different publishers.
Did you sleep? That's the real question. Did you sleep? Did you get any sleep in the last 3-4 years?
I religiously try and get 3 hours of sleep a night. On Saturday, like a couple days ago, that Saturday, I went and recorded a podcast about 300 miles away from home. I got home at 5 in the morning.
Wow.
I had to be at the library, my day job, at 11 the next morning on the Sunday.
Oh, man.
Then I had a studio call. Then I wrote stuff. Then I did a episode of Isekai Realms with the Dungeon Scrawlers. So
Yeah.
Chris is Christopher Oliveras is the game master, the dungeon master. Eric Scott DeBee and Rhiannon Held and Randy Henderson and so on play in Ellie Pitchford play themselves at real characters on Earth, but thrust into the realms.
Right. One of my
So
favorite
they need,
settings to do.
yeah. So I got to play two realms NPCs, which and I'll leave that as a surprise for who they were until it airs. So and then now today I've had to do three podcasts and write some more of the Viking rule Dublin off Cliath, and then now I'm talking to you. So and tomorrow I have to rush off to work, and I have two other things to do. And another studio call. So, that's life. And I am now, that saying that is supposed to be hilarious but is not, it's true. Life is the process of saying maybe things will slow down next week, over and over again until you die. That's life.
That is
And I really
life.
know that. Now, the one thing I will not accept for most people in life is, oh, I would love to do that, but I don't have the time. And I just call bullshit on that, because if I can cram in at this getting old, body failing stage in life, if I can do all the stuff I'm doing, if there's something you want to do in life, carve out the time and do it.
Yeah.
Don't go to your grave saying, oh, I really wish I'd been a horseback rider. I really wish I'd gone skiing. I always wanted to see Acapulco. Do it.
Do it.
There, tomorrow may not come. There, people die.
Right.
Someday it'll be your turn. Do the things. Don't leave it till later. I mean, yes, there's the finessing, the working out. Yeah, I might want to keep this job, so maybe I won't just take off for a rock festival when my
Right.
boss expects me to
Right.
show up, but yeah, do the things that you are interested in, or at least take a look at them. Go to a trade show or go to a convention and go, is this really for me? Nah, I don't think so. I think it was
Yeah.
just a passing fancy. But check things out, because then you live a much richer life. But yes, I'm like the Red Queen in Alice in Wonderland. I run like heck just to stay in the same place. I don't have to do it in the sort of dress she wore.
Yeah. Not unless somebody asked you to, I guess, maybe.
Oh yeah, if somebody
Yeah.
asked me to put on the dress, sure, why not? Because I've
That's
reached
for the
that
Ed
age where,
Greenwood's OnlyFans page that we were talking
yeah, there
about
you go.
earlier.
I don't care. I don't care anymore. It's like, okay, throw money, whatever it.
Tomorrow you're going to be on YouTube at Stanix Stan is the YouTube
Yes.
channel. So you'll be doing a
Yes.
show over there. Again, your Legacy of the Worlds, you're going to be at Origins, Gen Con, Dragon Con, Game Hole Con. Guys, you can find out at any of these locations.
Oh, and if you're in Brazil, I will be guesting at a convention they're holding down there,
Wow.
and I will be running an adventure I wrote for them. So May 15th is one day, June the 1st is another day. So I'm sprinkling those in as well as the North American conventions. Now
That's gonna
they
be
did
fun.
want me
Takes
to go
some time
there.
to enjoy Brazil while you're down there.
No, I'm not going. I don't have time to go because I've asked for too much time off the day job.
Oh.
I wanted to go and they wanted to have me, and so do the people in Lucca in Italy, and I keep putting them off and apologizing. But yeah, there's only so many places I can be at once. I need more stunt doubles.
More stunt doubles. Clone spells. Let's
Clone. Send in the clones. There's a
Send in the
song about that.
clones.
Yeah.
Oh man. You'll also be at Can Con in November, Blades of Glory, the D&D Festival in July. So yeah, all over the place. Just look. Keep an eye on the Twitter on all the social medias. Ed will keep you guys all posted. Also, guys, go check out edgreenwood.net. The YouTube channel is on YouTube at Ed Greenwood Official. On Twitter or X, it's The Edverse. Check out
Oh,
fans
and
of Ed Greenwood. Yeah, go ahead.
Greenwood's Grotto on Discord.
Greenwood's Grotto on Discord as well. Yeah. Those that are in the live stream, I posted the link for that if you want to go check that out. And I'm also patreon.com/EdGreenwood. Go and support him there. Guys, go and check out Ed everywhere. You get all the things. Also, you know, go buy all of his old books. All the backlogs. Go and buy them all.
Yeah.
Buy them all. Get
Make
the entire
me rich.
Collections. Yes. FateOfTheNorns.com. Go check out there as well. Get all the Athclath stuff as well. So,
yeah.
Support Ed. We love Ed. He does so much for the community, and he's such a giving person. There is not a person in the industry that has a bad word to say about Ed, at least not that I've come across yet. And, you know, I've been doing this show for a while now, and I've done other shows beforehand, and nobody's ever had nothing but amazing, great things to say about Ed. Everybody loves you, Ed. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Yeah, so if you see a white bearded guy standing behind you, it's either Santa or it's me.
That's right.
Because I'm everywhere.
Everywhere. Coming up on our future episodes, we're going to have Winter Mullinix is an actor, writer, director of games from Cryptic Studios' Neverwinter to Magic the Gathering and the new Wicked Fox games. She'll be joining us May 6th. That podcast will be available May 7th. Also, Austin Grossman is an author and game designer as well. His book, Soon I Will Be Invincible, is one of my favorite superhero books. It's one of my favorite books out there. And also, he's done games like, maybe you've heard of them, Dishonored, Deus Ex, just to name a few. So he's going to be joining us live May 20th, and that podcast will be available on the 21st. So thank you guys so much for being here. Make sure to rate, review. Those ratings and reviews really do help us get seen, get known. It helps us, and in turn, it helps our guest. So, for Ed Greenwood, I am Nick. I want to thank you all for listening to Epic Realms.
Well, there you are. I hope you enjoyed yourselves. And I do hope that you come back and join us again for Epic Realms.